One of the big problems that we're seeing nationally is that the number of cases a facility are seeing is rather stagnant. The margins on those cases is diminishing, and we're getting less reimbursement for those cases by the insurers. But at the same time, the amount of instrumentation, disposables, and trays are going up significantly. There's not been a concordant influx of money or funds or resources to sterile processing to keep up with it. So as we note, sterile processing is getting more and more and more behind, getting less money and having to do more with less money, and it's creating a very, very difficult issue.
In the midst of constant commotion in the healthcare industry, one unified voice rises above the rest, a beacon bent on banishing biofilm. They are sterile processing professionals who clean and sterilize their way to improved outcomes, and their patient safety victories often go unseen. This is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we give voice to that global force, fighting dirty all around the world. It's time to go beyond clean.
This Beyond Clean vendor spotlight is featuring Opflow, a data-driven company focused on value optimization. Opflow is reducing tray sizes by over 35% and helping hospitals remove backlogs in sterile processing departments all across the country, improving efficiency and providing significant cost savings to hospitals is the reason Opflow is joining us today. Our guests are David Rowe, founder and chief executive officer, and Dr. Martin Knowles, founder and chief medical officer. David has 25 years experience in software development with successful ventures. He started his career at GE Capital, and his first company, Cornerstone Consulting, co-founded with two partners, was sold to a private equity firm in 2005, while David continued to lead the acquisition and integration of six more companies into his practice area. Dave led the design and deployment of best-in-class solutions at Cargill, 3M, Target, Best Buy, Medtronic, St. Jude, Cardiovascular Solutions, and E-Trade. In recent years, he has architected and led multiple healthcare software solutions. Dr. Knowles is a vascular and endovascular surgeon who is double board certified in general and vascular surgery. He is an adjunct assistant professor of surgery at the University of North Carolina and works primarily at UNC Rex Hospital. His clinical interests include fenestrated and branched endografts in the repair of complex aortic aneurysms, venous disease management, and critical limb ischemia. Martin gained a Master of Business Administration from the University of North Carolina with a concentration in entrepreneurship. Martin is active in industry as a consultant and speaker, helping with device development, clinical trials, and case proctorship. And Lindsay, today we're going to learn a lot about their experience and how they've brought the surgical experience and the technology together in a very innovative and disruptive solution.
Absolutely. One of the things I'm excited to learn more about is exactly how Opflow technology utilizes actual data. We talk so much on our vendor spotlights and our podcast episodes about how data can drive improvement and drive change. And Opflow technology is one of those companies that utilizes data in that way. No surgeon or surgical services team member wants to be in a situation where a needed instrument is not present. And I think the fear of that scenario sometimes drives the excessive tray numbers up for a given procedure. There are some downsides to that excess, and I'm sure we're going to learn about that in this interview. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, this is going to be a really good one today. But before we get started, as a reminder, you can subscribe to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, or search for Beyond Clean on your favorite podcast application. We can also be heard on the Sterile Education app, available on iTunes and Android. Follow Beyond Clean on Twitter at Beyond Clean Info, Facebook.com/Beyond Clean Podcast, LinkedIn.com/company/Beyond Clean, and Instagram, Beyond Clean Podcast. Find our videos, including fighting Getting Dirty with Hank Balch, Real Talk with Bob Mars, and Beyond the Headlines with Mike Matthews at youtube.com/beyondclean. Beyond Clean offers social media and podcast consulting for vendors and survey preparation and remote consulting services for hospitals, surgery centers, and clinics. Email info@beyondclean.net for more information. Finally, Beyond Clean has moved to a new format for issuing CE credits for our podcast. We will be releasing Season 1 episodes between now and Season 7, which will air in the new year. This means that all 6 episodes will be certified in a single package with 1 quiz and certificate. Be sure to visit our website at beyondclean.net to take the quiz once Season 7 begins airing in January. We'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Dave Rowe, Chief Executive Officer, and Dr. Martin Knowles, Chief Medical Officer from OpFlow. Gentlemen, really appreciate you coming on the show today. Very excited to dive into the great work that you're doing at OpFlow.
Thank you. Thank you. Excited to be here, Justin.
All right, Dave, let's start with you because obviously, there was an opportunity for serious improvement here, and I think you can start by giving everybody the state of the market and what problems you were trying to solve when OpFlow began.
Right. So where we started, when we were solutioning specifically what we can solve within the operating room, we looking at the way that the current process works within the OR in the way that things enter the room, that are on preference cards for trays, for disposables, all the components that go into a successful procedure, there are and has not been any focus or enough focus on reducing those things that enter the room to create efficiencies in both the amount of time it takes to complete a procedure as well as the instrumentation, trays, disposable supplies, those things that are part of the procedure. There's not been a product or a solution that its whole goal was to look at reducing those components of the case where there's excess or waste. So the idea that came into existence when OpFlow went on the market was take the process that's currently there and look for ways and means to create lean, efficient upgrades to that existing process. We do that by taking the view of a surgeon, the view of a technology solution that we have provided, and then put into place ways and means for us to reduce those things in the room that we do not need. That's where the idea came from, and it's evolved into a lean efficiency product that's sole goal is to collect data that watches the processes that run in the room and then identify ways for us to make it more efficient and clear.
You know, it's so interesting because one of the things that we see in the industry across the board is surgical volumes will go up, but the inventories don't necessarily go up to match that either. And then you have all of those inefficiencies and extra instruments and trays. And then how do you analyze that? How do you show somebody who is holding the budget why you need to make changes in the number of sets you have? And how do you convince surgeons to pare down unnecessary instruments, right?
Absolutely. And that is the biggest challenge that we've experienced. And it's been that way for a long period of time. And the reason that there has not been change. The only way, as we found, that you can actually solve that problem is to enter the room, collect data about the actual usage in those cases, and then bring that back with associated data about the surgeon, the procedure, the trays that were used, and show the team in the room what they're using, show the service line or specialty leadership and the surgeons, hey, you ran this case and you used 10% of those instruments in that procedure. Can we look at reducing that waste, those that were not actually used, down to a more manageable number? So the only way that you can have change in that process is to collect data that doesn't currently exist because no systems collect that data, and then give that back in a way that people can consume that and understand what was actually happening in the room and how we can actually make change.
We here at Beyond Clean are big fans of data. We've talked a lot about it on many of our shows, and we know how powerful it can be. But to your point, there is just such a lack of data in sterile processing. And I know we're going to dive into that a lot more as we move forward. But Martin, I want to go over to you and take a little bit of a step back. Why don't you introduce the company? Like, who's involved in the business? How is it set up? What's the platform based on?
Sure. So the team involves 3 set individuals. Myself, I'm a vascular surgeon. in the University of North Carolina system. Dr. Ben Wood, who's a plastic surgeon, who really came up with the idea and started the whole process. And then Dave, who's our guru technology business development expert, who really has had a long, long history of building hospital-based solutions and products like this. So we started off two surgeons looking at each other, trying to figure something out. We needed a way to get this off the ground as we realized it was a problem. And so we engaged Dave, and the three of us really have taken this to the next level. OpFlow is a cloud-based software platform. And really, as we had talked about, it's a suite of products that exist to increase the efficiency within the room. Our goal is to make the room run safely, as lean and as cost efficient as possible. And by doing that, we evaluate the trays, the instruments, the supplies, the personnel, everything really that's going in and out of that room. And really, to jump back in terms of discussing this data, you know, there's these big pushes in healthcare to talk about artificial intelligence and all these wonderful things. We have not made any changes in this sterile processing field for a long, long time. And we are so far behind that using this data, knowing this information that exists here, we really, really can make this process lean, and we can save the hospital a significant amount of money.
It's not easy to do. It's not like somebody who is just a data head can all of a sudden insert themselves into this space. Like, you really have to have a great deal of expertise. Even just learning instruments takes a very long time for sterile processing technicians to learn when they first get started in this career. It can take 2 years before they really have mastery of instruments, and sometimes even longer than that. So obviously you've got the expertise on your team.
To be very honest, as surgeons, I think we have expertise in that, but we really spent about a year in this process really delving into what actually happens when we ask for instruments. What happens? Where does it go? Where does that lead to? How is it stored? How do they come up? How do we make sure that the things we need and the things we don't know we need, how they get to where we are? And so we really, really dove and did a very deep dive into the sterile processing with a technology expert that could look at it and say, hey, I think we can fix this problem, and this is the way we should think about doing it. And we'd wrap our heads around it, and we came up with some really creative ideas that I think really blend that ability of that expertise in sterile processing and in surgery, as well as taking a completely different view. Someone, Dave, who's never been in an operating room before, being able to look at it and really craft a technology product that helped us answer the questions we were hoping to answer.
Yeah, that's excellent, because one thing we know is the use of trays and the instruments and the supplies, like, that's all part of the supply chain. And there's a great deal of opportunity in cost savings just by running more efficiently that way as well.
So in addition to that, Justin, one of the challenges that we experience is, in order to solve that supply chain, the focus of our solution of our product needed to go all the way from your preference card that's going to live within your EMR down to your SPD, both in the ability for the pre-management systems and processes that exist in your sterile processing group. That purview needs to be very wide. We need to have everything that would have been available in the scheduling of the case, the procedure, the surgeon, the location, as well as all the instruments on those trays. So in order for you to do the collection and be able to invoke the change that we do, it can't be a simple solution that comes just out of SPD or just comes out of your preference card management system. It needs to be holistic all the way across for you to produce the data that is needed so that we can actually make the change that we need to make.
That's absolutely right. And that interdisciplinary approach, I think, is the key to making something like this successful. Now, Dave and Martin, through the work that your team has done, you've established that on average, less than 20% of instruments opened for a specific case are actually used. And when you think about the fact that there are 51 million surgical procedures performed in the U.S. every year, that's a lot of instrument waste, a lot of labor waste, a significant need to eliminate unnecessary costs. And what I want to get into, and what I know our listeners are dying to get into, is what data is needed for the OpFlow platform.
So there's a variety of pieces of information that we need to have in order for us to get to a point where we can collect the usage, the instrument usage by a case, for us to run our analytics. The first portion of data that we need to have is the preference card. is on the preference card is a description for what the procedure is going to be, what all the equipment, medications, so supplies, and then trays that are going to be associated with that procedure so that the room can be pulled and set up correctly. So we need to have that data in order for us to understand how to attribute the counts, the usages that we have to the right cases so we can do analytics across procedures and service lines and things like that. So that's one section that we need to have. We also need to have information about the tray definitions. So those named trays, tray types that are described within your preference card and are pulled for that case are described in another system that'll say this vascular tray has got these specific instruments at this quantity. So we pull in those two sets of data along with information from your item master, which is going to have cost of supplies and disposables that get into the room. We need to have those three pieces of information along with the schedule. So those cases that are going to be run for a day or whatever it is from a period of time, such that we have the ability to understand when we actually enter the room to collect data, we know that it's surgeon Dr. Knowles doing a carotid endarterectomy in this room at this time. We have no HIPAA or PHI data, so we don't need to get into that because we don't need to have that patient information in order for us to run our product. But we do need to have that rest of the information available to us so that when we actually collect the data in regards to the vascular tray was open, we used these 10 instruments, we need to collect it at that really granular level so that when we start to roll up and ask the question, if you use 10% or 20%, was that just for the carotid or does he also have that for an aneurysm or what are all the different variations that could occur on the uses of those instruments across a variety of different procedures?
Dave, thank you for breaking that down for us. And I think one of the things that's really important, and you made a great point when you said you don't need that specific patient information, and that's a barrier that's eliminated in implementing this type of program. Let's talk about the importance of data, the data that you are able to obtain through the process that you implement in facilities.
Sure. The biggest portion of the data that we collect is the actual instrument or supply usage by case. We collect that data right during the case, typically at close. Our team will enter the room. We will collect that data, asking to the team in the room, the scrub tech, what specific instruments were used. So there's a relatively small number because we're just touching the used instruments. We collect the quantity of that instrument, understanding that, you know, there's a very small percentage that actually get collected. During that collection process, which typically takes somewhere between 30 and 90 seconds, doesn't slow the case down because we're typically doing that at close when the scrub tech has a little bit of time to ask and answer some of those questions back and forth. It's not going to add any case duration or slow things down. But that usage data, which is the per instrument quantity at a case level, is the component that doesn't exist anywhere else within the system, anywhere else within healthcare in general. So we collect it there. And then we also come back after we've gone through and understood that we've got usage, we come back and validate that later in the cycle and come back in the room and ensure that if we are going to make a change to a tray definition, that those people in the room have their ability to put their feedback into it and put their fingerprints on it to make sure that the changes that we're proposing has everybody's buy-in and support before we make a change.
So when you collect this data, when you turn it into hard, fast data that can actually be usable, what are the ways in which you make this data usable for a specific facility, for a specific hospital, for that change management?
You make a good point. The biggest challenge that exists is change management. But teams, surgeons specifically, are trained to have evidence base or data to support decisions that they make. So what our product does is once we've collected the data, puts that into analytics and reports that are digestible and consumable by the audience that would be able to do that, which is surgeon, service line leadership, it's the circulators, scrub techs, everybody that's going to touch that case needs to have some feedback into understanding what was actually used. So we provide a variety of different mechanisms to show that visually to them in forms of graphics and into reports, as well as data dumps into Excel if we need to get to, depending on what and how a person is used to digesting that. But our tool basically gives that back and says, all right, if you're looking at vascular and we ran 150 counts against that tray and you only use on average 20 of 100 instruments, we give it to a form where people that are used to using those trays and those instruments, seeing that in a format that allows them to digest it and then come back with feedback, is the real crux of our tool. That's what allows the change to happen because people are comfortable that what we're making a change for has got basis and data that allows us that for that change to happen.
That data is so critical. And the process is extremely thorough, and there's a lot of hands-on. I think it's really good that you emphasize the fact that it doesn't disrupt the workflow in the OR while you're collecting that data, and it doesn't decrease how quickly somebody can turn over the room, because it's more with less these days, and that is exactly what OpFlow is all about. But if you tell somebody that it's going to end up delaying how quickly they can turn the room over, they're going to see it as burdensome instead of a partnership that you're establishing. And then what you said especially was to influence change. And so you let them be stakeholders in the process. You don't disrupt their workflow. And then you're engaging them so that they get something that's usable for them to improve their jobs as well.
Good observation, Justin. And the interesting thing that we've had as we've gone through projects, the first set of teams that go through the rationalization process with us will be fearful because they don't understand how long it's going to take and how it's going to affect my case. Those teams that have gone through processes with us and rationalized trays, the scrub tech specifically, are the biggest benefactors in most of the work that we do, because we're taking away from them the need to set up, count, and break down instruments that they know they never need for cases that they're running. So once they've gone through this effort and they've seen how they provide the feedback as to what the quantities were used on the cases that we followed, and then they come back and see a tray that is now 40%, 50% smaller than it was before, and they just gained back time because they don't have to set up, count, and break down things that didn't need to use, and we identified those and took them away. That is a real upside for that team in the room. The second, third time through when they're rationalizing tray, they're huge advocates because they understand that this is a huge benefit for them.
I think there are two important points to add on to the change management aspect to this type of process or project. One is that, you know, historically for us physicians, circulators, scrub techs, anything that has been added by the hospital or by administration in the hospital, in the operating room, around the perioperative process, tends to be cumbersome. It tends to be more documentation, more this, more that, that doesn't add any value to the people that are actually doing the work. That is the fear with OpFlow when we start. And that's something that we work through. And I think that's why the change management side is so important, that they realize that you aren't getting in their way and that you're making things better. And the wonderful aha moment of once you've changed those trays and the scrub techs are setting them up, and the first time they do, they realize that they're spending much less time setting up. It's the aha moment, and it really becomes viral. It spreads, and they start to realize, hey, this is going to work. This is great, and now it's worked. And so once you've really gotten past that first set of trays, really it's a very easy process, but it takes a lot of engagement. And there's a reason that these types of projects haven't worked in the past. There are internal projects where they put the tray out and ask you what you've used before, and people try to think about it. And without the data, jumping back to the data, we can't make that change. There's a discomfort in the change because there's no way to validate the experience. And there's no way to know if you're the surgical tech and you recommend taking things out, that the surgeon's not going to jump down your throat when they change the tray over. And then they realize that they come back to you and realize you're the one who recommended it coming out. We have a very important process that really pulls this change management together, that we get the surgical techs and the surgeons and everyone to be very comfortable with the data, very comfortable with the process, and transparency with the sign-off to make sure that everybody understands what's happening so that there isn't pointing of fingers or wondering why things aren't where they are. And really the communication around this whole process is what makes it thrive.
So really good point there. I think some people may say, to your point, we've tried to do these things in the past, but gee, it seems like we ought to be able to do this on our own. Why aren't they able to do it on their own? Why do they need someone else's help?
Yeah, it's a great point. I think there's a couple reasons that this hasn't worked or doesn't work all that well. If you are trying to do change management in your own hospital and you take some of your staff and you put them on a project and you push them to try to make a change, they have to go in the next day and do a case with all those people that they're trying to push with change. Change is uncomfortable. And so in general, people are going to be very hesitant to push for big changes when they have relationships with people. I think there's a benefit to having a set of outside folks come in and be able to help with that. That's one. The second is data, data, data. Nobody has the data. Nobody's able to look at it and say, hey, oh, I use that instrument every single case. You can't take that instrument. And then we pull up the data and we show that actually it's been used 2% of the time. in hundreds of cases, then everybody suddenly goes, oh, yeah, no, we never use that. You can take that. That's fine. That's not a problem. And so I think those are a couple of the reasons that it doesn't work. And to be honest, the biggest reason it doesn't work is the hospitals do not have the extra resources for people to spend the time and really do it in a way that they're going to make some meaningful change. We talk to hospitals all the time who say, you know, we've done something like this, but it took us 3 months to change one tray. You know, we can change many, many, many trays in that same period of time because of the way that we do it.
Yeah, and sometimes you have all these dynamics going on within the team that can disrupt the ability for that change management process to be productive, or you have some people that end up generating conflict between the two of them during the process, and they have to continue working with each other for a long period of time. Is that another benefit? Is you're sort of shouldering the stress of the project, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. We really handle it from cradle to grave. Everything from communications with the team before we start, as we start, as we move through what we're working on, where we plan to move next, what trays we're working with, feedback. We take on this whole process because we know that's the devil in the detail. It lives and dies in that process because it's very, very easy for it to fall away once something else happens within the hospital, or it's a busy week, or there was an issue with SPD and some trays didn't get taken care of. As outsiders, we can come in and really focus and keep the team very, very focused on this particular project because we can maintain it and manage it, as I said, from the very beginning to the very end, until you have made those changes and those trays are rolling out.
So one of the advantages that we have at Optflow is having surgeon leaders in our company where we come to those dialogues where we have the ability and need to make a change on a tray. And the pushback comes from a team member inside the hospital that's a surgeon, and they want to hear from another surgeon that's gone through this exercise before and understand what the implications from a surgical perspective for the surgeon are. When we go through those rationalization efforts, we put a review process in place where we tap into Dr. Knowles, Dr. Wood, and others to ensure that the pushback or objections that could arise in that process are mitigated by hearing that from another surgeon. We do the same thing for other leadership. So administration, when they're into the change management and communication process, we can have them have conversations with our team members as well as other hospitals have been through this with us to understand what are those sticky wedges? What are the people that the roles and the people in the hospital that we need to engage early to make sure that we can get through this change process without having undue unrest or undue timelines that just we can avoid because we see it every day and we understand how that process works.
And once you guys have gotten that approval, once you've received that multidisciplinary decision to move forward with the implementation of this significant change and everyone's on board, how specifically then do you support that change inside of a facility?
So we own that from the point of a proposed tray definition, which is what we describe once we understand what the new configuration of that tray should look like. Once we've got that, we've got the appropriate reviews and sign-offs done. We own it, meaning that we actually work with the internal team to do a handful of things. One is we'll determine on your account sheet what changes need to happen. So we produce reports and outputs from our product given to the SPD team to understand what that tray count sheet change should look like. This is one piece. We actually then work with that team plus the surgical scheduling team to understand if we're going to pull those instruments off those trays still need to be used, right? So if you have 10 instances of a vascular tray, if you're going to make a physical change, meaning that we're actually taking those instruments off that tray, we have a period of time in a day that you can maybe take 4 or 5 of those trays offline, pull them all out, bag and tag, take those instruments that are not being used anymore, put them back into the materials management and put them back into inventory. And then once we have the update physical change of that tray, then we give it back to the sterile processing team to get them sterile ready to go back for next cases. And then the subsequent day we do the remaining trays to a point where it's all the way rolled out. The biggest issue that we've seen in hospitals have tried to do this is that's a complicated process and you need to have a coordination to ensure that once the tray is identified for a change that it gets all the way to a point where it's back in circulation, because otherwise we haven't invoked the change that we want. We need to get it back into circulation so it's being used and not just a good idea on paper.
talking about how you support that change management from beginning to end, really throughout the entire implementation process, it sounds like you really have buttoned up ways in which you can make implementing this type of improvement system in a very simple way. Even though it's very involved, it has a lot of data involved, a lot of people involved, you've really fine-tuned the process of implementation. And so I know our listening audience is really going to get a lot from that conversation. I also know that they're going to be very interested in getting down to brass tacks. Let's talk about what specific benefits the Opflow platform brings to a department and that interdisciplinary relationship.
Absolutely. I think as we talk about it, I think the easiest metric to look at is if we're looking at the instruments that are on trays, we're looking to reduce those numbers of instruments. We talk about how less than 20% are used. We don't plan to go so lean that we only leave the 20% that people use. We want to have some extras in there if it's a safety item, if there's a preference from a physician, things like that. But what we're trying to remove are the things that are never, ever, ever used. This change is independent of whether there are multiple service lines, multiple services, surgeons using this. We can change a significant portion. We're not trying to go so lean that now we have to have peel packs for absolutely everything. And on average, we can get around a 35 to 40% reduction on the instruments off of your big major workhorse trays. That has significant cost benefits, whether it's repurchase of instruments on a year-to-year basis, or whether it's planned for new purchase, or you need more sets of trays as you're getting busier with as a service. And so there's clearly a cost benefit from that standpoint. The other is you're clearly creating a significant efficiency in the SPD. If there are less instruments, 40% less instruments that are in the tray that are going to be processed, that's much less time that people have to individually treat each one of those instruments in decontamination, in assembly. And when we talk on an instrument basis, we can also talk about tray level basis. Once we have made a reduction in instruments, often we can consolidate smaller trays that are used alongside those trays and actually consolidate and remove whole trays. And then from an SPD efficiency standpoint, we're having to process less trays overall.
One of the benefits that we're looking to deploy into hospitals that we work with is a twofold section of change. One is, as Martin said, we reduce the overall size of the tray. The second is we reduce the number of trays that get processed over a period of time. So if we can come in and take off 5,000 to 20,000 instruments off those trays and have a hospital reduce the number of total trays down by thousands of trays that are now consolidated and not needed, that allows the SPD, the processing team, most of them have a backlog. There's too much volume. The surgical volume is rising slow, but the tray count is going up, meaning the total number of trays that are processed per year is not in correlation to the number of cases that are being followed from that same metric. So we're looking to take those two metrics down. We want to have less instruments. We want to have less trays processed. That creates a myriad of opportunities, and it creates a very significant return on investment for a solution like ours.
And in terms of quality and safety, those are all really great points and significant benefits. But as far as quality and safety are concerned, how does implementing this program affect those things, specifically in the sterile processing department?
Absolutely. I think we have to be very careful with not only the size and the weight of the trays and making sure that we stay within the rules, the IFU with those, and make sure we avoid citations. I think that there's significant quality and safety improvements by having less instruments. The teams can spend more time carefully evaluating each one of the instruments and making sure there's no bioburden that remains on them, that there are no defects that need to be fixed. I think this raises an important aspect of the fact that in sterile processing, attrition is a significant problem, and hiring qualified people to come in and learn this process and be in charge of something that's so important as the sterilization of instruments can be a significant issue. So if we can cut a significant portion of the work, meaning we're removing a significant portion of the trays, the instruments, so they're not so overburdened at all times, that we think we can make it a better place, a more fun place to work, so that people don't get burned out and leave.
I think one of the great points that you made was, especially when I talk to sterile processing professionals, many of them, if not most of them, will note that steady increase in instruments per tray, and they'll note that number of trays per case has outpaced the investment that's actually being made in their department, and that creates that bottleneck. And I think one of the things that your platform really gets to the heart of is really balancing out the trays per case, balancing out the instruments per tray, but also really allowing both the operating room and the sterile processing department to, instead of being reactive, it allows them to be proactive and have what they need, and eliminates that bottleneck that can be created.
You know, absolutely. One of the big problems that we're seeing nationally is that the number of cases a facility are seeing is rather stagnant. The margins on those cases is diminishing, and we're getting less reimbursement for those cases by the insurers. But at the same time, the amount of instrumentation, disposables, and trays are going up significantly. There's not been a concordant influx of money or funds or resources to sterile processing to keep up with it. So as we note, sterile processing is getting more and more and more behind, getting less money and having to do more with less money, and it's creating a very, very difficult issue. What we bring is we can alleviate many of those pain points and also add a significant return on investment, somewhere in the 2 to 3x range. If we add supplies to that, not just the instrument rationalization and consolidation, we can get that return on investment to about 4 to 5x in the first year. And this really allows for an alleviation of this overburdened staff and enjoyment in that work area, as well as it gives you the ability to fund many of these other initiatives that maybe have been on the back burner for a while.
One of the unfortunate realities that we see in hospitals is that the time spent trying to take dollars out of SPD and take dollars out of the OR are misguided in the fact they don't have a true value that's enterprise-wide. Meaning, if you rationalize a tray and you say 5,000 instruments or 10,000 instruments, and now you've got significant dollars to put back into your system, the only way that projects typically have been funded into organizations is to have a high dollar return. Either you do high dollar returns, meaning you have a big project that gets you multi-million dollars in returns, or you penny pinch and just try to cut corners to save time and money. That's been the reality that's been unfortunately pushed upon the SPD teams for years and years and years. So this is the first, as we understand it, the first real introduction of a solution that creates that, you know, could be millions of dollars depending on your surgical volume from a cost savings, that as soon as you do that change, administration's ears perk up and they say, great, now we have a way to save some money. And interestingly, it makes the process and the efficiency in the OR and the SPD better. So everybody wins. So this is a really nice scenario where the team in the room gets to see efficiency gains, the SPD gets to get out of the backlog jam that they're in, and the administration gets to come back and say, hey, I get my performance goal met because I've saved X dollars in this last fiscal year.
Another point that I wanted to hit on, Dave, I think you said this really well when you talked about the fact that implementing something like this platform, optimizing trays, rationalizing trays, making it easier for people to do the job that they were hired to do will lead to greater job satisfaction. I think that that's something that's undervalued, and having a system in place that allows more flexibility and more freedom to actually do the job instead of being burdened by the stress, the additional cost, the additional labor associated with those inefficiencies, I think is a really, really big benefit as well. Not to mention all the instruments that are taken out of trays can certainly be repurposed to create additional sets. That's another benefit along with that cost avoidance.
Yeah, with that, Lindsay, the interesting thing on the burden discussion, what we don't do is create an extra burden in running a project like ours to the team that's going to be in the room or administration or SPD. If our process was burdensome and we added case duration or we added undue stress to do a project like this because you're looking for savings and efficiency, but if in doing so you create a extra burden on the team to just look for those opportunities to save, those projects never get off the ground. And if they do get off the ground, people are resentful and they don't have the time to do it. We've been extraordinarily conscientious to ensure that when we do the process that we run, that there's as minimal impact to all players in the system as possible. We bring in the staff from our side to ensure that when we do these collections, that it's our staff doing it so that the hospital team is not impacted. The process that we look at for change control and the implementation process we have has got as close to a zero footprint as we can to avoid the downside of teams in the room having to add one more thing to their list, having to justify that we're going to save you time and money later. We want to do it all ourselves and then give you that time and savings back. And then they get to realize that and they'll be a part of the solution and not just persisting the problem.
Yeah. And it should really lead to surgeon satisfaction too. Things should just go smoother with less instruments and more efficiency and easier to manage the number of instruments that are available during the procedure. I can just see that everything runs better and everybody's happier. So I think for our listeners at this point, it's trying to figure out how much value Opflow can provide their hospital. And there's two methods to really quantify that. So how would somebody who's listening, Dave, determine if this was a great opportunity for them?
Sure. So what we do, we have two different options that we go through. One, which is called a virtual audit, which is basically taking in the tray type definitions that they have for the major trays, understanding your top 30 or 40 trays, the number of instances that there are of each of those trays, the number of times that those trays are used per year, and then the instrument count, looking for those high volume trays so that when we actually then go through and do an audit of the data in those trays, which is the quantity by instrument. So the tray would have 100 instruments and there's, you know, the names of those in that tray that we then use. What we have inside of our company is a rationalized set of trays we call benchmark or baseline that we then compare what the hospital has with the trays that we have so that you have a comparable. We need to ensure that if you're using this, say, a total hip tray, we want to compare your total hip tray to a fully rationalized total hip tray from our side. And then we come back and say, all right, based on the comparables that we have, you're plus or minus X percent. We typically see the 35 to 45% reduction. We come back with that and show the hospital, not only are what we're saying, we predict that you're going to have savings. We're going to tell you that for that total hip, you're high on clamps, you're low on this, whatever the numbers are that come out of the audit, we give that back. What that allows for, as soon as we can get to a tray level understanding of what the new future state tray definition is going to look like, we can then run an ROI model before we ever start, meaning that we can tell you that on average, we're going to give you back 10,000 instruments that are not going to be used. We're going to save you X number of processings that you didn't have to do, and you're going to have a CapEx savings of whatever that number is. The really nice part of that is it's no charge service. We do that on our own. You give us the data, we give you back findings report, we present it back to you. And then you can take that ROI model plus a trade level findings report that shows you what the differences are. And you can use that to fund this project because most of these things are a struggle because if you can't quantify what that savings is truly meaning to your hospital, it's hard to make the change.
Yeah, Dave, that's great. And that's only just one option. There's another option as well.
So the follow-on option is to basically do an on-site collection. So once you've identified the top 20, 30 trays that we've done our audit and comparison against, for a $10,000 fee, which is credited back in your first project, we come in, have our staff follow 2 weeks full of cases, and then layer in what we typically have for our baseline with the usage that you provided based on the collections that we did on site. And then we marry those two together and show you the actuals with the baseline to give you a new ROI projection and both your data and our data combined into a single report.
Yeah. Is one of these models better than another one? I can see that they each have their own benefits. The virtual audit being it's a little bit less effort up front, but maybe the on-site audit is a little bit more thorough. Have you ever done both methods where you start with the virtual to sort of identify the opportunity and then come in and do the on-site audit to refine it?
Actually, our process is we do the virtual audit regardless. So if we engage and you provide us the data, we're going to do the virtual audit to ensure that we understand what those first steps and if there's value to be had before we send people to your facility. The second is then the on-site audit to actually ensure that what we're projecting is as close to an actual as possible. So it's typically virtual first and then on-site. For those hospitals that we work with, a lot of them want to see the virtual, understand that there's so much value to be had that let's just go right into the project, but we can do either way. It takes about a week to a week and a half to do our virtual audit once we get the data, and it's a 2 week on-site for the second section.
Well, your website is operativeflow.com. So if anybody wants to go and learn more, again, operativeflow.com. Are you also on LinkedIn? Where else can people find you?
We are active on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as the website, www.operativeflow.com.
Excellent, gentlemen. This was a really intriguing interview. And as we said earlier on, data is just so important to moving the industry forward, and really just your partnership with the hospitals and being willing to get in there and do that work and really speak to the end users. And that also speaks to accuracy of the data that you're collecting. It's really a testament to how much you care about bringing this solution and making real change in the industry. And it's certainly disruptive. So as we get ready to wrap up, Dave, is there anything you want to add?
Yes. Thanks, Justin. First of all, thanks everybody for taking the time to listen to our podcast. Really want to stress, from the outside looking in, the ability to make change in the operating room is hard. And without having a solution and a partner that lives that every day and has a proven process to make change, it's a really challenging proposition to make. So our life that we live here at OPFLO is creating that efficiency back in that operating room, driven by surgeons and technology, but then having a very strong clinical basis. So as you look at that change, don't be afraid of it. Let us come on that journey with you, because we're having very proven success and it's an exciting process.
And Martin, how about you? Is there anything that we didn't discuss that you want to add, or something that really needs to be emphasized before we wrap the interview?
Yeah, thank you, Justin. In addition to what Dave said, I think one of the big takeaways for me would be, with the way that we do this, we do not require HIPAA or PHI, and so thus we don't require an IT review. So we can get this up and get this going very quickly. The other thing is that we do have a national reach. We have a national partner that we've been working with that give us a ability to really help across the country.
That was David Rowe, founder and chief executive officer, along with Dr. Martin Knowles, founder and chief medical officer from OPFLO. And Lindsay, here's the thing that I just absolutely cannot harp on anymore, but it is all about the data. But this data does not exist in any other system, and their team goes after it and gets that data and makes real improvements. Even our chief medical officer, Dr. Peter Nickel, wrote an article about the waste in the industry, and he did his own self-study and found that anywhere from 14 to 19% of the instruments were actually used that were in the trays, and the rest of them were unused. And this is very much tied into that same conversation.
Yes, I agree with you, Justin. And I think it's safe to say that up until the last few years, and probably still today, many facilities are implementing a manual process to try to get at these same answers and these same increased efficiencies. So there's really been little motivation to take this next step simply because of how time intensive and labor intensive it is. But having an OPFLO representative actually come in, help your teams manage this huge change, take the bullets and manage the dynamics between departments and staff as well, showing your healthcare facility that leveraging technology and leveraging that empirical data from actual case-based instrument usage is really what can lead to that innovative and disruptive change that's necessary in the industry.
Yeah, and you really want to do everything you can to reduce the number of instruments in those trays. Here at Beyond Clean, we're constantly looking for products and solutions to help make the lives of sterile processing professionals better. OPFLO has solved a problem that many of you have out there in the industry and is the first solution that has proven results.
And really want to encourage everybody to go to operativeflow.com to learn more. That's going to do it for this vendor spotlight. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review, because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Lindsay and myself, thank you for listening to this vendor spotlight episode of Beyond Clean.